Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, but in full disclosure, I originally suggested that we had three bad martinis today, so a couple of these are being spun a little bit to fit the proper martinis, but we start with the good, and that is the revelations, in the new book forthcoming from former Defense Secretary Bob Gates, who, of course, was Defense Secretary during the last 2 years of the Bush administration and in the first couple of years of the Obama administration. And in this book, he pulls very few punches. He says President Obama was skeptical that his Afghanistan mini-surge, then pullback strategy would work. He says his heart wasn't in it. He says Obama and Hillary Clinton both essentially admitted the only reason they opposed the surge in Iraq was over politics leading up to the 2008 election. He says Joe Biden's been wrong on every foreign policy issue in the past 4 decades. That's not really a revelation. And then he also suggests that he almost quit because Obama was trying to order him around through Biden and through Tom Donilon. And he says, hey, how about going through the chain of command like it's supposed to go? So we always wondered why Bob Gates stuck around in the Obama administration. Now we find out he was pretty frustrated for the limited time he was there. But we are seeing, and in some cases confirming, what we thought we already knew here, Jim.
What we're hearing from Gates in this book is not really unbelievable revelations, although both Obama and Hillary confessing to each other that their staunch opposition to the surge in Iraq was based out of politics of the other one. It's kind of an interesting, kind of funny revelation. It basically confirms our worst suspicions about Obama and, for that matter, Hillary. They're basically craven. They take their positions based on political expediency. The old line on from Democrats on Iraq was, we have to get out of Iraq because the real war is in Afghanistan. We've got to win the war in Afghanistan. We get out of Iraq, and of course, all of a sudden, Afghanistan doesn't matter so much. It's totally unfixable. We need to bring all of our troops home and all that stuff. There's quite a bit of a portrait of the president going out and telling the American people things he doesn't really believe, that he doesn't really want to do. Basically, he just wants to forget about Afghanistan, let the Taliban take over. Who the heck cares? He just wants to get away with it so he can get back to the business of fundamentally transforming this country. How is this the good martini? Well, it's always kind of nice to know that our instincts are right and that, you know, to quote Dennis Green, he is who we thought he was. That Obama is fundamentally kind of quasi-isolationist, as minimal military involvement as possible, certainly nothing to do with nation building. The rest of the world is on their own. And it's not surprising. The front page of USA Today is that, you know, the resurgence of Al-Qaeda, Fallujah, you know, the Al-Qaeda flags are flying over it. Iran is, we have a deal with Iran and we can totally trust those guys. Syria is a mess. The war is spreading into Iraq. The war is spreading into Lebanon. And you just, you know, it's going to be a bloodbath from Algeria to Kashmir, basically. This is not going to change over the next 3 years. So, you know, how is this the good martini? It means Barack Obama is every bit as bad on foreign policy as we said he was going to be. And I suspect the American people won't be paying a ton of attention to foreign policy until something blows up that involves lots of Americans. Even Benghazi eventually faded from the headlines. For better or for worse, that day is going to come. It's going to be for worse, but you cannot ignore the world for a long enough stretch without there being consequences. We are probably going to remember Barack Obama as a miserable failure on the foreign policy and national security front.
Jim, real quick, in 2016, when Hillary, I assume, will run, do you think some of the revelations here will hurt her, or will most of this people just say, well, we kind of figured her opposition to the surge was probably in prep for 2008?
At some point, you know, in the 2016 cycle, you'll probably see some ad emphasizing that Gates's point that Hillary takes her positions based on politics and she'll do anything to win. I don't know how damaging that will be in the grand scheme of things, but you know, again, greater clarity that even the people who work closely with Hillary Clinton think she's a shameless partisan hack. Good news.
Two martini number two now. And yesterday, the big drama in the U.S. Senate was whether there would be the 60 votes to advance. Yes, there's still a 60-vote threshold on some votes in the U.S. Senate. This would be the Democratic plan to extend unemployment insurance benefits without spending offsets. But, of course, they don't have 60 votes on their own, so they need some help from the Republicans, and they got six of them to go along to get to the magic 60-vote number. When you look at the six Republicans involved, you see Susan Collins, no big surprise. Lisa Murkowski, not a big surprise there. But Kelly Ayotte, Dan Coats, and Rob Portman also broke with the GOP. And, Jim, we talked earlier in the week about how you hate to see people stretched even further if they can't find work right now. But the idea of not being even willing to demand offsets for the extension of those benefits, kind of a head-scratcher if you're a Republican.
Another development that isn't unbelievably surprising. You probably are going to, you know, you have your first-tier Senate Republicans who are likely to bolt the party on a tough issue, and this is getting into maybe the second or third tier. Rob Portman, Senator Ayotte, they aren't exactly the first ones you'd expect to flip on an issue like this. I mean, it basically comes down to is not wanting to hold a town hall and get asked, why didn't you extend my unemployment benefits? Whenever you do that, you're painted as being cruel and uncaring. My greater kind of, you know, observation here is that I really wish that when we had this debate, we could have some sort of sense of, all right, what is an acceptable amount of time for someone who's lost work to collect unemployment insurance? Clearly, you should get some, and at this point, it's down to only 26 weeks, which is half a year. That's 6 months. At one point, you know, for a long time, it was at 73 weeks, which comes out to a year and about 4 months. And at one point, during the depths of the recession, we had it at 99 weeks, which is nearly 2 years. We don't want people living on public assistance forever. And while we understand that, you know, the economy is still in lousy shape and, you know, there are more applicants than there are jobs out there, there are studies that have shown that for a certain number of people, they tend to delay going back to work if they have, you know, generous unemployment benefits. I guess the question is, when are we as taxpayers allowed to say to somebody who's unemployed, you really need to take the first job you're offered now. You really just need to get off public assistance. It's been long enough. And my question to these Republicans and to the Democrats, to the Obama administration, to anybody who wants to call somebody else uncompassionate, uncaring, well, what's long enough? And my suspicion is that just as Democrats will never specify what level of taxation they think is too high, they will never specify what level of spending they deem to be too high, they will never deem what level of defense spending they think is too low, on this they will never say, okay, this is an acceptable cutoff. I guess 72 weeks, but remember when it went down from 99 weeks to 72 weeks, that was considered cruel and heartless and mean and all that kind of stuff. So it's a constantly, you know, ratcheting up the threshold of compassionate to the point where it just keeps going on, and ultimately these people need to get back to work. I know anecdotally of some people on unemployment insurance who have turned down jobs because they think those jobs don't pay well enough, or they aren't good enough, or they're not in their chosen field. Well, okay, I'm willing to help people out when they're going through periods of unemployment, but 6 months, a year, at some point, you got to get back into the game, folks. And, you know, not so sure that, you know, a very mushy, muddy thinking of what constitutes compassion is what's driving our budgetary decisions on this issue.
And if any of our listeners were astute, you might have noticed I only listed 5 GOP senators instead of 6. Dean Heller, Nevada, was the 6th in that. On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And as you tweeted earlier today, Chris Christie's 2016 narrative might need a little bit of tweaking after it appears that there were some vindictive politics aimed at city mayors, particularly in Fort Lee and Jersey City, allegedly for not endorsing Christie's reelection here. Basically, what happened the week of September 9th, multiple lanes of the George Washington Bridge that head into Fort Lee, New Jersey, were cut off officially for research about toll lanes and toll booths and that sort of thing. But now that some of the emails and text messages involving one of Christie's top aides, David Wildstein, and someone else, suggest that this was not exactly about research on toll lanes. In one of the exchange of text messages on the second day of the lane closures, Wildstein alludes to messages the Fort Lee mayor had left complaining that school buses were having trouble getting through the traffic. Is it wrong that I'm smiling? The recipient of the text message responded to Wildstein. The person's identity is not clear because the documents are partially redacted. No, wrote Wildstein in response. I feel badly about the kids, though, said the person. They're the children of Buono voters, Wildstein wrote, making a reference to Barbara Buono, who was Christie's opponent. So, Jim, one of two things is happening here. Either he is vindictive and is part of it, or he has no idea what his aides are doing.
Yeah. First of all, the idea this is some sort of traffic study, that official explanation is increasingly looking like BS, because nothing in these emails is referring to a traffic study or anything like that. And when you see phrases like time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee, it's very hard to interpret it as anything else other than, all right, you know, time to punish this guy. I had a furious discussion with some folks on Twitter, basically just one guy who basically is insisting that, one, that we on the right should not notice this. We should not write about this. We are being disloyal to conservatism by discussing this topic right now, Greg. This is asinine, okay? Neither you nor I nor any other conservative was put on earth to cover up when our guys screw up like this, and to say, oh, it's okay, this kind of abuse of power is no big deal as long as our guys are doing it. horse pucky, and there's a lot of other words I want to use there, okay? You don't give the government the authority to shut down roads to be used as a tool for enforcing political authority. And I cannot believe that in the year 2014, we need to make this point, right? That a State Department of Transportation isn't supposed to be used to punish one's political enemies. The next thing is, well, it's, you can't tie it to Christie. No, it's only his deputy chief of staff. This is really just a variation of the rogue low-level employees in the Cincinnati office excuse we saw in the IRS scandal. So this idea that maybe he has no idea of what's going on, but then in that case, he should be really deeply troubled that people in his own administration would be doing something petty and vindictive and all that stuff. And, you know, there are some people who automatically have turned to this spin of, well, this just shows he's a tough guy. He's, you know, he's hard-nosed. Politics is hardball. Again, horse pucky, because this isn't punishing the mayor. Punishing the mayor is not giving him an invite to a meeting at the governor's mansion or something like that, or skipping him over for a town hall or something like that. It's going after the mayor. This is punishing the commuters. And there are Republicans, Democrats, and independents in that traffic in Fort Lee. All right? This isn't, you know, punishing your political rival. This is punishing people who happen to be unlucky enough to live where your political rival is a mayor. This is a galling abuse of power. The attitude displayed in these emails is galling. And this idea that we on the right are being disloyal or morally wrong, and that our necessity of beating Hillary means we have to avert our eyes from this, like it'll make a darn bit of difference. Like the Democrats won't mention it if we don't talk about it, Greg, okay? Right. Shh, be quiet, everyone. Be quiet. Don't let them hear us. You know, galling and appalling and frustrating. As people can tell, I am really worked up about this. And I got to say, I don't think of myself as a reflexive Chris Christie basher. There are days I really liked him, days I really haven't liked him. I think this is kind of separate from the partisan politics matter of whatever you think on other issues. That ultimately, this is a matter of Christie, or at least members of his team, believing that they can use state, you know, the state's authority to punish people who don't do what they want politically. And that's not what we elect people in this country to do. And if he has this attitude as governor, boy, I'd really hate to see that in the White House. Now, some people might say, well, we already have it. Remember the shutdown theater from Obama? And I'd agree with a great portion of that thing. But that doesn't make it any better when Christie does it. Really galling hypocrisy from some folks allegedly on our side, Greg. I think once you start excusing abuses of power, I don't really think you're on our side anymore. I think you're on the side of the power abusers. But that's, you know, end rant.
Now that it's officially out there, I think we'll see whether the heads roll, which they clearly didn't in the IRS scandal. So, and even if they do, it still doesn't necessarily tell us the full scope of everything, but it will at least see his handling of this. And these are apparently people he's very fond of because they're pretty high up. Yeah. And some of them are even associated with his work in the Republican Governors Association. So
the only, you know, plausible play here is I had absolutely no idea what was going on. We can be doubtful of that, but let's keep an open mind, and for him to fire everyone involved. That's the only thing that can kind of make you say, okay, he didn't know what was going on. He's got bad people working for him, but he was in the dark, and he's decided to hold people accountable. I guess we'll see, Greg.
Quite a day. Jim, have a good rest of the day, and hope your blood pressure stabilizes.
My heart! See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.